Hello and welcome to the Access Point podcast series from Quintiles IMS. My name is John Doyle, and I lead the Enterprise Solutions team in our Real World Insights organization. In this series, we'll take an in-depth look at the latest issue of Access Point, our annual publication on current trends, insights, and advancements in real world evidence. In this particular issue, we focus on innovation, technologies, and methodologies that are pushing the boundaries of how evidence is being generated and applied across healthcare systems. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by Dr. Nancy Dreyer, Global Chief of Scientific Affairs, Real World Insights at Quintiles IMS. Nancy recently authored an article in Access Point, Enriching Evidence Through Pragmatic Randomized Trials. Nancy, it's so nice to be joined by you today. I'm looking forward to our conversation about this cutting-edge methodology.
Nice to be here, John. Thank you.
So let's set a foundation, if we could. In your article, you reference randomized clinical trials as the historically leading methodology to generate clinical evidence, certainly for labels, and the best source of information for developing clinical guidelines and understanding how well treatments work. But you also note their limitations. Could you give us a high-level primer on RCTs and explain some of those limitations?
Happy to do that, John. So randomized controlled trials are great tools that compare carefully selected patients, doctors, and clinical settings, and they experiment by arbitrarily assigning some people to get a new treatment and others receive a placebo or an inactive treatment or some type of fake. So that the advantage is that there's no judgment on the fact part of the doctor selecting which patients get which treatments, and you get very comparable groups. So RCTs focus on studying optimal settings and care, usually for uncomplicated patients. They also have lots of rules about what kind of information can be used and what needs to be available for audit, just in case additional checking is needed. That means that patients need to come see their doctors, and every test and measurement is performed in a medical care facility. So if you're enrolled in a clinical trial and you've decided you had enough and don't want to continue, it's against the rules for them to chase you down by phone, for example, and ask you some simple questions about how you're doing, though this could be hugely informative. The last point is that the outcomes from classical clinical trials don't always translate into anything noticeable in the real world. So, if, for example, if my systolic blood pressure goes from 140 to 138, does that make any noticeable impact on my health? Or if my cholesterol dips below 200, what difference does that actually make? So classical randomized controlled trials measure, can a drug work? Not if it actually does work or makes a difference that would be important to those of us who would be typical users.
When you mention the real world, I think of all the publications that you've read with regard to observational research design and how to measure effectiveness of a drug versus the efficacy you just described in randomized clinical trials. Where does this new methodology of pragmatic design fit in according to that spectrum of randomized trials all the way through observational studies?
So pragmatic randomized trials are answering questions about effectiveness, if you like that model. So not can it work, but does it actually work? Because we patients in everyday life don't always take our meds. We're often complicated and take medicines for different treatment for various conditions that bother us. So we're often more complicated than the kind of patient you'd see in a classical clinical trial. So they tell you the effectiveness, the efficacy, but the pragmatic trials tell you in a regular clinical setting by reasonably conscientious clinical medical care provider what difference it makes. So how effective is a drug?
When I think about observational research as an epidemiologist, you know, one of the pain points, if not the Achilles heel in observational design, is selection bias. How does a pragmatic randomized clinical trial address that potential bias?
John, that's what's so exciting about this as a tool. The beauty of randomization is that you hope by studying people, all who are eligible to be treated with your drug of interest or your treatment of interest, when you randomize the treatments, you assure pretty much you'll get balance between factors that affect whether a patient will benefit or experience harm. So you'll learn about the risk-benefit analysis, and you'll have essentially comparable arms. So this avoids 98% of the selection factors that drive people to use treatments in the real world. Now, I always like the example of asthma, which I learned a lot of this. You study new meds and they can look like they're harmful. But then what you realize is that people try traditional meds first, and often the people who will get the new meds are the ones who haven't benefited from anything else. And they may be treated too late in the course of disease to effective change, or they may be people who are resistant to treatments, to any treatments. So this guarantees a much better balance in the characteristics of the patients in the treatment arms.
I'd like to kind of play on that comment you made about balance. It's one of the things I know you and other expert study designers are always trying to do. You want to balance the need to derive internal validity as well as external validity or generalizability of the results. And the more I listen to your commentary, the more I think that in many ways pragmatic RCTs sort of find that right balance between generating a valid and reliable result, but at the same time being practical and generalizable to larger populations. What do you think about that?
I think you're right on the mark, but let's take it one step further. So, yes, it's generalizable. Yes, it tells if something really can work. And it has outcomes that make a difference to all of us. But pragmatic trials and pragmatic randomized trials are being used a lot in practical clinical decision making. So the next step in the pragmatic trials, beyond first figuring out if the product actually works in conditions of everyday medical care, is trying to figure out how it can be used. Right now, these tools are starting to be used for a lot of clinical decision making, like for surgeons. If I do the surgical approach through one vein or another, does it make a difference? Or if I use a particular anesthetic or a particular contrast medium. But the big new frontier is really about bringing new drugs to market and, more specifically, expanding label indications. You know, the 21st Century's Cures Act in the United States directs the FDA to start looking more at real-world evidence for label expansions. In particular, and the pragmatic randomization is a tremendously strong tool that they can call on while having everything else real world, so they get balanced groups and they can make strong decisions. But the question is, will regulators accept that data? Because the outcomes you measure are different from a classical clinical trial. They have to be something that regular clinician would see and a measurement they would perform.
So appreciating that challenge to communicate to the regulators, are there any other challenges associated with pragmatic RCTs?
Well, first of all, there are several challenges. So the first, as I mentioned, was who's the audience. And outside of the U.S. and the 21st Century's Cures, which is pretty new, there's not as clear an indication that real-world evidence can be used for label expansions, even though we see the European Medicines Agency expressing greater interest in registries. But in many parts of the world, this is not yet accepted. The second big challenge, it requires a change of thinking by our clients. They're used to measuring the same thing the same way throughout their clinical development program. So whatever their outcome measure was in phase 2 and phase 3, they want to use that exact same measure in phase 4, which is often a clinical measurement that's not performed in the real world. So first they would have to change their expectations to get a more pragmatic outcome for a randomized pragmatic trial. And then second, if they want to save money, they'll start to think about, do I have to use the exact same approach in every country in the world? Particularly big pharmaceutical companies say, okay, I have a global development program. I'm doing my phase 2 everywhere this way, my phase 3 everywhere that way, and the same with my phase 4. If you accept that they're different, that the stakeholders in the different geographies are starting to have different expectations of what kind of evidence they see, and you're willing to make different studies in the different countries, it can be tremendously efficient and tremendously powerful.
The theory and the philosophy of the design just seems so promising as a real breakthrough to bridge this gap between traditional clinical research that studies efficacy and safety in smaller, more select populations, as you point out, versus the larger scale studies, the heterogeneous populations in observational research. Can you point to any examples of how pragmatic trials are being used in the real world?
Well, there are lots of pragmatic trials in surgery that we're starting to see. And we're starting to see pragmatic trials nested in registries where you randomize and then you do all your evaluations from outcomes in those registries. And then we're starting to see really elegant, creative solutions within health systems where, take the VA, for example. They're doing a phenomenal pragmatic trial of two different diuretics right now. And it's a largely electronic study where they ask the doctors if they'll participate and they'll allow their patients to be randomized. And then when their patients consent but pick their randomized treatment up, whatever it is, from the pharmacy that's typically used by the VA, and then all the outcomes will be gathered through existing data that's already being collected. So imagine what that does to a study. And we see examples in the cardiovascular outcomes world where we're testing some linkages through Medicare data and doing studies that cost one-tenth of a traditional approach. But if you let me expand on that for a second, John. So cardiovascular outcomes trials are common requirements for anti-diabetic drugs, and they're large, they're expensive trials. And imagine this example. If we did not blind the drug, so if everybody knew what treatment they were getting, mm-hmm. and we didn't use a placebo comparator, which isn't really particularly relevant in the real world because I don't want to know if my treatment works better than nothing. I want to know what's the best treatment choice for me. So if I use those two options, I added real-world comparators, and I did not hide the identity of the drug. I have several examples where I'm able to cut the cost of a cardiovascular outcomes trial in half. And so imagine we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. And so in the simplest example, I have 120,000 patients, 110 million for a classical study. If I relax the requirements for blinding and don't do that and use active comparators, I cut the cost to 40 million. So that's a big savings.
I can imagine that with that savings, they also could be potentially more efficient at reaching broader populations, maybe subpopulations of interest that heretofore may have been feasible to find due to economic constraints.
True, but also think for a moment about the regulators. They say they want more pragmatic trials, but they're a little nervous because nobody really knows what that means. And
sure.
Pragmatic, I've simplified it to not blinded and no placebo. And what the regulators say is, I'm feeling nervous about not blinding. Maybe knowing what the treatment is will influence how well the doctors record or recognize the outcome. And that may be true for some conditions where the outcomes are quite subjective. But I think these pragmatic trials lend themselves to pretty good, strong clinical outcomes. So, for example, hospital admissions, major heart attacks that bring you to hospital, there are a lot of things that there are very good clinical assessments, objective assessments, that shouldn't be influenced by whether or not a treatment has been blinded. And in fact, these outcomes can also be evaluated by blind raters who are blinded as to what the treatment is. So there are a lot of ways we can increase the scientific rigor without the cost.
You make a great point that not only are these concrete outcomes that you could study economical to measure, and they can be measured reliably in the real world, but also imagine they're more relevant to a diverse set of healthcare stakeholders, clinicians, hospital providers, payers, potentially patients. What do you think about that level of relevance for the different healthcare system stakeholders with regard to pragmatic trials?
That's the big win here, John. That's exactly why these are so appealing to the stakeholders just that you mentioned, because they don't treat the optimal patients. They may not be the biggest, fanciest hospitals, but everybody deserves good treatments. And the questions about what treatment works best for not the average patient, but the particular patient you're sitting down with in the office. So this is the only way we're going to get strong answers for complicated patients, for the elderly, for the children. You take a reasonable question where the new treatment may or may not be better than the average treatment, and you'll figure out which is better, and you'll be able to look at wide variety of subgroups or people with varying characteristics, varying comorbidities, other factors that will affect their chance of benefiting or experiencing harm from a treatment. So it's the future of personalized medicine. It's the future of affordable care, and highly relevant.
Well, Nancy, thank you so much. It's always so invigorating and enlightening speaking with you, especially about new designs and methodologies such as pragmatic randomized clinical trials. Thanks again.
A pleasure, and thanks for giving me this chance to talk about something that's so interesting and will be so transformative.
To our listeners, thank you for joining us for this issue of the Access Point podcast series. We've been hearing from Dr. Nancy Dreyer, Global Chief of Scientific Affairs, Real World Insights at Quintiles IMS.